Three, two, one, and welcome back to the SBH podcast. Okay, so in this podcast, we're going to be talking about access to fishing locations, I guess. This is a great question that I was asked on Instagram. The name is escaping me at this moment of who asked the question, but I know you listen to the podcasts, and thank you so much for the great ideas about what I should do for the next podcasts. So in this podcast, well, the thing is about fishing in general is there's two ways you can really fish for striped bass, and that's from shore or on like a boat or a kayak or something. So, and for a lot of us, we're forced to fish from shore. So the deal is with that is there's a lot of run-ins with not being able to fish locations, even though you might really, really want to. And believe me, where I live is, it's probably one of the more extreme versions of that. And the reason I'm saying that is in the area of Cape Ann, each house that's on the water is easily over $1 million. So it's difficult when you have to go and try to fish these locations, especially off the rocks, and you're around a lot of really, really expensive houses with very, very pretentious, angry owners. And I have some absolutely fantastic stories about me getting the cops called on me and everything like that. So it's pretty, and I've been yelled at, I've yelled back at, I'm sure this is very similar to lots of other people who've fished, but the thing is about Massachusetts, for example, we're fortunate enough to have a law that protects our right to be able to fish. It's under Mass General Law 91, and it states you can fish, fowl, or navigate below the mean high tide mark. So pretty much what that means is you can fish below the highest high tide. So if on a king tide with a huge storm and whatever, and the water, as high as the water will physically go, that's where you're allowed to walk on. And for the rocks, it's pretty much, people, I guess, say that it's pretty much, if the rocks are black or have that dark algae growing on them, that's like to the mark. That's just the rule of thumb. Obviously, there are places that the water definitely gets past that, but are not darker colored rocks. So, whatever. But that's kind of the rule of thumb for around here. And keep that rule in mind, because if you are fishing below the mean high tide mark, nobody can kick you off. Even if they call the police can't kick you out. So that's the other thing. So keep that in mind. That is a very important tool to have. Because it's Mass General Law 91 states that you can fish or fowl below the mean high tide mark. And that's what I always say. And that's what I tell everybody when they try to kick me out of these locations. But the best places, and when you're looking to like fish, what I first do and what I do every single winter is I start by my immediate area. I'm talking about traveling at most 25 minutes away from my house. So if I can drive within 25 minutes from where I live, and I can get, which I live on Cape Ann, so pretty much in any direction on Cape Ann, if you drive for 20-25 minutes, you're gonna be at the water. So so I'm fortunate enough to live so close, so I try to have all of my fishing spots within 25 minute drive of my house. And I've been driving around, you know, walking around and looking at different spots all winter, and have been super excited trying to park in places where hopefully I don't get my car towed. There's one time I was fishing for some holdovers a few weeks ago, or I think it's a week ago. I can't tell with this whole virus and staying at home and stuff. I have no idea what the days are, how many weeks have gone by. So hopefully these podcasts can give you a little break from that. But anyway, so I was going looking for holdover bass in this spot that looked really good, because what I was looking for is the river that comes in from the open ocean into this Back Bay estuary area, and then there's Little Finger estuary rivers that move up these probably maybe 2 to 3 miles from the open ocean. And believe it or not, the bass, the holdover bass, are going to be that those 2 or 3 miles up the estuaries. And unfortunately, I didn't catch anything. And the thing about holdover fishing is it takes a lot of effort to find a small school of fish. And you have to go, with my experience, you have to literally fish countless skunk trips before you find one little school of bass. So I've only done it once this year. So it was just because, again, I was bored and wanted to get out of the house. But I also was looking at a spot that would be potentially extremely good for the spring. I've actually found 2 spots this spring that are really good. But I was driving in this one area, and I went down this road, and it was like private road. And I was like, whatever, let's see what we can do here. And so I drove down the road, and I parked, and I was fishing for a while. And then I saw some, I've been seeing a lot of, like, there's a lot of little, like, I mean, they're little minnows, like mudfish. I call them mudfish just because they're like little minnows that are in the mud. And so there's a lot of little minnows that were swimming around in the estuaries. And I was like, okay, this is a good sign. I mean, obviously, like, the bass needs some sort of a food source in the winter. So I felt like I was in the right area. Unfortunately, I got skunked, but I was going to take a video to post on Instagram. And my phone, I have an iPhone 7, and my iPhone, as many of you guys probably know, the older iPhones, and when it gets a little bit cooler out, went from, I think it was like 85% battery power to 4 in like seconds. And so I was fishing for a while, and it was just in my outer pocket of my waders, and I pull it out, and I thought I had high, like, a good amount of battery life, and I was like, oh shoot, I'm like about to die. And of course, I'm like, probably walked, I don't know, maybe a mile away from the car, which I was parked in a spot that on a private road. I was like, so now if my car gets towed, and because I was fishing at that point for maybe an hour, so I was like, if my car gets towed, I am not only multiple miles away from my house or anywhere, anyone that I know, I also have no battery power on my phone. So I was like, oh no. So at this point, I'm just gonna fish until I feel good, and then I'm gonna just go back. But I kept in the back of my mind, I was like, oh shoot, hopefully my car's there when I get back. And luckily it was, but that's just something to keep in mind when you're parking in these spots, that, you know, it's very likely that your car could get ticketed or towed or whatever, especially on a private road and especially in these very expensive neighborhoods, because people don't want you fishing there for some reason, or don't want just random cars around. I think that it helps that we're not really in the, like, tourism season right now, so people are not super, they're not really focused, or they don't think, like, they think if you're parked there, then you obviously live around here, because there's not going to be tourists, driving around parking random places so they can go to the beach or sightsee or whatever. So, I luckily was able to get back to my car and drive away, so I was so scared that I was going to have, like, I don't know what I would have done at that point if I had no battery power in my phone and my car got towed. That would have been a bad situation to be in. So don't be like me. Make sure that your phone is going to survive and put it in a warm pocket. That's actually what I did, is I put it in like a under pocket in my coat, and it warmed up and the phone jumped to like 35% battery power. So, you know, these phones, I don't understand why this is happening to me, but whatever. So, as far as like finding spots that work well, I've talked a lot about finding locations, but I've not talked a lot about finding like parking places and stuff. I mean, it helps, like when you're looking for a spot, I think I have like 3 spots that, have like, I shouldn't say that, never mind. But if you're looking for like an area, you want to be looking for parking spots. Whether that be, I don't know, like a restaurant parking area, a baseball field, what else? Like something like that, that you can like park there and then you can walk to an area. And so that's why when you're fishing, like, look for areas that you can, like, park somewhere that is fairly public and then be able to get to where you're fishing fairly easily. Now, one way around that is to have a bike in your car. That's a good way. So if you're parking in one spot, you know, it's like you can't park here and you're getting kicked out and whatever, you can bike to where you're wanting to fish. That's a great way to get around fishing in a more private area, because like, it's not easy to get access to a lot of these places. And so what I try to do is I will try to find a place where I can park and not look like I'm, like, my car is just being very suspiciously parked in a random area. So what I'll do is I'll park somewhere that doesn't look that suspicious, hopefully. And then I'll go and fish in an area. And then hopefully you don't get kicked out. I mean, that's really the goal. And unfortunately, there's so many places that are, like, look so good on Google Earth that I would kill the fish. But you have to, unfortunately, you have to, like, yeah, it's, like, impossible. You couldn't get there without walking through somebody's backyard or, yeah. I mean, there's no way you could get to those spots, really, realistically, and legally. And I know that there's definitely, like, times where you, what I like to call lightly trespass, like walking on someone's retaining wall and stuff. You know, we've all been there. We've all done that. So that's not that big of a deal. And when I, like, fish, I try to be as legal as I can. And I also try to be as safe as I can. Now, when you're, the thing is, when you're fishing during the day, don't fish in front of a mansion's, like, right in front of a mansion, because 9 out of 10 times, if the guy's even there, they're gonna come out and yell at you. I mean, I've had, here we go. Let's get into a great story. So I have this vendetta in one of my spots, with this guy, and the thing is, this is the deal. So this spot is private. It's on a private road, and it's one of those things that you have to park in one spot, and you have to park far away, and you have to bike from far away all the way over. And there's, and I guess it's kind of, it's like a lot of the places around here where, there's like a retaining wall, and then it's like a little sandy beach, and then you can walk out along, cause it is, and it's going to be like a bay or a cut or whatever. And, or cove, I guess. So it's like a cove. And so what you want to do is you want to go and bike to the spot. This is how I've gotten around really, like, getting in trouble. So what I try to do is I bike to the place. I hook my bike up to the fence, and I hop the fence, and I'm now on the beach. And the thing is, at this point, I have a fishing rod. I'm actively fishing. I'm below the mean high tide mark, so he can't do anything to me. And then I walk across the rocks. Now he has his mansion, and he has this huge retaining wall that goes all the way around. And then there's like a bunch of rocks. And then like a cliff, and then more rocks, where I fish off of. And so what happened was, first time I really fished there, literally the first time I fished there, I'm fishing, and I walk all the way out there and I'm fishing, and then he shows up behind me, and he's like, hey, and I turn around and I look, and I see this guy standing behind me. I'm like, oh great, this is gonna happen right now. And he got mad at me, and he was like, you can't fish here, this is private property, and you're trespassing, you have to leave now or I'm gonna call the police. And then I was like, because, like, he was being mean about it. It wasn't like he was asking me nice. So I said to him, I was like, according to Mass General Law 91, states that I can fish or foul below the mean high tide mark, and I can legally fish here. Call the police if you want. And he never called the police. So I proceeded to do that about, I don't know, probably fished there the entire season, one season, and then last year, so the greatest season of all time, I came with my brother and one of his friends. And in this spot, there's like a few boulders a little bit further out, you know, in the water. So we were prepared to swim out to the boulders and fish off the boulders. There's one boulder in particular. It's all by itself. It's like probably 100 yards. Not really. It's probably 60 yards offshore. And it's probably, I don't know, maybe 10 feet deep the entire way out. So it's not that deep, realistically. And we swim out to the boulder. And that was our plan, at least. So we were to swim out to the boulder and fish. So we're in the water and we're swimming along, and this guy comes out and he starts yelling at us, saying that we're trespassing and everything like that. And I said, Master Alani, I say this every single time to this guy, and he's probably getting sick of it at this point. And he's yelling at us, and I say, according to Master Alani 91, we can fish or foul below the mean high tide mark. If you have a problem with it, call the police. And so this time he was worked up enough, and he had enough courage to call the police. And so he calls the police on us, and we're at this point we are fishing 60 yards offshore, and you know, I look behind, like we're looking back every once in a while, and we see that he is there, you know, talking to the police, and we're fishing, and they weren't about to fish into the night, and this was at dusk, and we were just, you know, out there just to have some fun and maybe hook into a nice fish, because the literally 2 days, or was it 3 days after? I guess it was 3 days after I hooked a 48-inch bass from that spot. So I don't know what to tell you. We didn't catch anything that day. I wasn't really focused on me personally fishing, so I was trying to get them on fish, and it was whatever. We didn't get anything that day, but we probably fished for maybe an hour and a half, and no joke, the police were talking to him for an hour and a half, and then they left, and we probably fished for maybe 20 minutes longer, and we swam back. We climbed across the rocks, and we were walking out to leave, and as we were leaving, I mean, there was a police car sitting there waiting for us, and so we got up, we walked out, and as we're walking out, the police officer comes over, and he starts talking to us. And he was talking to us, and literally, why I told you verbatim what I said. So the only thing that I said to him was, according to Master Law 91, we are legally allowed to fish under the mean high tide mark, and you're legally allowed to fish or foul below the mean high tide mark. And if you have a problem with that, call the police. So that's what I told him. And the police officer said to us that that he said that we walked through his yard, which, first of all, we didn't walk through his yard because we walked across the beach. I mean, I don't know what this guy was thinking. So we didn't walk across his yard. We walked across the beach. And then he also said that we were swearing at him and whatever. And he was like, yeah, he said that you guys were swearing at him. And we're like, and meanwhile, the other two guys that I was with were just ragging on this guy because they're pissed, but that he was like lying that we were swearing at him, because I was the only one that spoke, and that's what I told him. And maybe we said stuff when we were 65 yards out in the water to each other, but not to him. So when we were, and he was by that point in his house too, so we never swore at him. Like, that was just, we never did. And the cop was like, look, this guy clearly is, you know, like, we can't do anything because you guys are legally allowed to fish below the mean high tide mark. But he said, just don't interact with him anymore. And I was like, okay, fine, whatever. I'm still fishing there regardless, because if I'm catching giant fish from that spot, it's not like something that I'm gonna just get bullied out of fishing. So that was one story where, you know, the cops got involved. They said, he's like, I talked to the guy for an hour and a half, and he was about this, and he said, look, I wasn't about to get in a yelling match with you guys from 65 yards away. Like, that was not gonna, like, he was not about to yell at him. That's what he told the guy, or yell at us, and that's what he told the guy. And he said, I'll wait and I'll talk to them when we got back. And it's hilarious because now whenever I go out there and fish, the guy sits, I swear to God, he's got to be sitting there with binoculars waiting and it is extraordinary because it's not like how often are you like staring out your house window waiting for someone to walk by? I mean, it's so, it's the most ridiculous thing, because you can't like walk by there at all without him coming out and yelling at you. It is extraordinary. And the hilarious part is he's only there for like, I don't know, a handful of months, you know, in the summer, probably from maybe July to maybe August, but like, and that's it, like July and August, and then he's not there for like whenever I'm fishing there, because I'll fish all of May and I'll fish, you know, all of August, and he's not there, and August and like, yeah, whatever, and he's just not there. And so I don't understand his deal, but that's not the only guy that I've had yell at me. And so at this point, my thing is like, number one, like if the guy's like yelling at you, then tell him the Master in Law 91 thing. But if he's like saying you guys shouldn't be fishing here because you're on private property or whatever, and he's being nice about it, just ignore him. And so that's what I do, is I tend to just ignore the people, and what they'll do is they'll go and they'll be talking behind us, and I won't even look. I'll just like keep fishing, and I know they're behind me. And if they get all bent out of shape, then they call the police. If you are below the mean high tide mark, the police officer cannot legally do anything to you. He can't ask you to leave or anything, because you are fishing below the mean high tide mark. And this is something that like I feel like a lot of people have to deal with. But a good way to get around that is fishing at night. And that's the thing. Like if you fish at, you know, 12 to 5 in the morning, the guys, whoever's going to be kicking you out there is not going to be awake. And as long as you're not making a whole lot of noise, and if you get good enough at fishing at night, you don't even have to turn on your light. So there's no way with the wave and the wind noise that the guy would ever be able to know you're there. And then there's one time where, I had an epic night of fishing. So I had my light on a few times unhooking a bunch of fish, and this is a different spot. And, I'm walking back from fishing, and there's a police officer there, and I had my light off, and, I'm walking back across this area, and, the police officer comes up and is like, oh, somebody called and said that there was somebody, that there's somebody suspicious out in the water fishing. And I'm like, I'm suspiciously fishing. And he's like, yeah, I know. And then the guy like went back into his car and drove away. I've had other scenarios where I was fishing in a spot, and the cops drove by, and I was actually unhooking a fish, and the cops drove by, and they definitely saw my light. And because then they slowly started to drive by with a spotlight, like a legit spotlight going out across the water. So when I see them looking across, panning across the rocks, I turned my light off and I just crouched down, and they went and they panned like over in the general direction that I was at. But I don't think they saw me because like I'm wearing all black and it's pitch black out. And I was just hiding, you know, waiting for them to leave, and then they left. It was very like, it's so weird when you're fishing out there. And then the other thing about fishing at night is when you're fishing and you're like in your own head and you're not paying attention, all of a sudden like there's other people there in wetsuits. It like sometimes you get like it's so funny because you people like show up randomly, and oh man, you get definitely startled when you're in a place not expecting there to be anybody else, and all of a sudden there's people there. I don't know. I've had that happen to me a few times. And it's funny because I talk to a lot of people, and they're like really well known in the, like in Cape Ann, they fish a lot, and they're like, we never see you fishing. Why do we never see you fishing? And I always say, well, like, I fish in the same areas that they do, obviously, but a lot of my success is at really weird times, and that's what I found, is that not a lot of people fish when I fish. That's probably why I was one of the more successful fishermen this year, because I was fishing at a time that nobody else was fishing, and that was extremely productive. So not only am I fishing in a lot of the same locations that they're fishing, I think that between like me biking two areas, like parking somewhere and then biking to the area, I think helps me get into locations that nobody else is fishing, which is, again, it's really easy when you you know, are fishing, like, I've probably six spots that no other fishermen fish, and I know that for a fact, because they can't, because it's, number one, it's extremely, extremely, like, private property, like, going down private roads and having to, like, hide your bike in the bushes and then walking out there in the middle of the night with all these giant mansions behind you trying to fish. And it's one of those things that you have to do it at night. You can't fish there during the day. There's a few spots that would be killer, like pencil popping areas. I can't imagine, like, you know, chucking pencils at this one spot. There's beautiful current that just pushes across this, like, boulder field. And I guarantee you that there would be some fish, you know, hanging out in that area. My computer is about to die, so hold on one second. I just need to plug it in right now. Sorry about this. Should have done this before I started the podcast. Okay, we're good. That would have been sad if I lost all of my footage because the podcast died. But yeah, I fish in a lot of spots, and I think that that is something that is very, like, a lot of people fish the canal. And if you have, like, a canal bike, use your canal bike, throw the rods in the back, park at the, you know, wherever, the, like, hiking area or the, you know, open lot, parking lot somewhere, and bike from there a mile to your fishing spot, or half mile to your fishing spot, and then hide your bike in the bushes or something, lock it to a tree or whatever, and then go fish, because that way you'll be able to, that will open tons of different areas for you. And I've heard all sorts of stories of people getting super creative and creating stickers of, like, I was DMing with this guy a while ago. You might even be listening to the podcast. I forget exactly who it was, but he was saying that he, like, put some, like, government sticker, like, he, like, replicated some, like, government sticker, and he put it on his car, and then he was able to park in these areas that were super private, and the police and stuff, when they would go by and look at his car, they would see that it had this, like, government sticker, and they wouldn't ticket him or anything. So there's definitely different ways you can get around it with parking. I feel like that's probably the biggest, you know, killer of, like, access is parking access. I think that there's many ways around private areas, getting to private areas and fishing. I think there's many, many ways. It's just all about the amount of trouble you want to get through to fish that area. And that's, like, it's one of the things that's, like, so many people fish, I wish that we were able to go and, like, I wish that, like, if you were fishing, you had, like, priority to be able to park in. Like, if you bought a fishing license, you could put a sticker on your car and it would be, like, promoted, like, go fish, go enjoy the outdoors. Because we're not, like, trying to, like, go and steal stuff, you know, we're not trying to, like, do anything crazy. We're just trying to get out there and fish. And it's super, it's annoying when you have, you know, all these spots that are absolutely beautiful and are super, like, oh my gosh, I have this one spot, except for it's on a point, and it is, I have to probably hike 3.5 miles across rocks to get to it. Now, that is, I don't know if you know how long that will take, but that's going to take me a solid hour, I would assume, and maybe two. I kind of will start going pretty quick. Like, I'll kind of jog across what I can, but, that in gear and on a hot night is not great. So there's one spot that I have that there's I think it's like a wildlife preserve area. And then you can walk across the rocks to get to that fishing spot. And the reason I want to fish there is there's, a group of boulders that stick that are, like, smaller, and they stick out really far into the water, and it just rises up, and it's going to create this rip. And oh my god, it, like, if you could picture, like, the perfect, like, rip with, like, boulders, like, that would be it. Like, oh man, it's if I ever get to the chance to fish that, I'm gonna do it, and I'm gonna mark out like the perfect, if like I get the perfect wind on a moon phase, on like a new or a full moon, I'm sending it out there one night. It will take a year to get out there, and I hope it will be worth it, because otherwise it will be very frustrating to be hiking hours upon hours across rocks for nothing. But I do think that it being at the point, so there's got to be current coming from either side. I mean, I just got to figure out what tide I want to fish, if I want to fish a incoming or an outgoing, and exactly how. And that's the thing, like, you really realistically, like, as I've always said, try to go and fish a new spot during the day, because you want to be able to know your bearings at night. And that's tough. That's really, really tough to do when it's super private property. And I think that the more you fish, the better you get at, like, you know, areas and being able to fish areas at night. And I've, you know, it's definitely not like it takes a specific type of person to really want to put in that amount of effort to go out and hike across rocks for miles. Because there is another spot that I have to hike 45 minutes to get to, and then across rocks. And that is, you know, that's a tough place. That is a tough place. There's some, like, I call them, they're like, well, it's like a chasm in the rock. So you got to swim, you know, and so I have to swim across a few spots. And you can, it has to be the perfect conditions. But when you get there, I guarantee it will hold at least a few bass over 15 pounds. At least. And even on the worst of the nights that I've fished there, I've always caught at least one bass over 35 inches. Always. And so I know that holds fish. And I know I can throw almost anything in there and I'll catch something. I try to throw as large profile baits as possible in that spot, because I know that there are some absolute, like, huge mega bass in there. They just, I don't know why, but they just get that in that spot. They're just so wide. They're not very long. I mean, I've caught a lot of bass that are like 40 inches, but they're like 35 pounds. They're like so wide. And a 40 inch bass is normally like 20, 25 pounds. But man, I don't know what about that, what's about that spot, but they're just built like, you know, I don't know. They're just so thick. And they have big shoulders, and they're older fish for sure. But it's definitely tough when you're fishing a bunch of different locations. And the thing is, about this next season is, I'm so worried that it's not going to be as good as it was last year. Now, the only way I can really control that is just taking a very precise log, fishing log, and doing my homework and trying to read the water as best I can. Something that, like, you'd think for somebody that has caught as many big fish as I did last year, I'd be good at reading water and good. Like, I'm not that good at reading water. It takes me weeks and weeks and weeks and weeks and weeks to figure out, and hours upon hours to figure out exactly which direction water is moving, you know, around rocks and stuff. Where other guys can just look at a spot and be like, it's moving that direction. It's kind of counterintuitive, you know. A lot of the time in these spots, when you think the water's moving one way and it's not that easy. It definitely gets easier the more you do it, and I've gotten a lot better at doing it. But one of my best spots, it took me months to figure out where, like, exactly why the fish were staging. And I asked a whole bunch of people, and you know, hypothetically, and you know, I'd bring people there and I'd ask them the question, why do you think there's bass here? And I would see what they would say. And that was what I would think, you know, when I was fishing a spot, it's always good to hear what others think, because sometimes they have a viewpoint that is different from yours. And sometimes that will spark craziness. And, you know, and then I've also done the stuff on Instagram where I'll post a picture and I'll be like, I'm standing on a rip, it is 6 feet deep there, and the tide is moving right to left. What would you throw? You know, like, I've done stuff like that. Where would you stand? I don't know. Like, I've done a few things like that, to see if people you know, what people think. And it's pretty interesting because a lot of the time it's very similar to what I'm thinking. And that's really cool because I'm like, yeah, these guys know what they're doing. And, you know, if they came into that spot, probably wouldn't have, you know, you probably would think that you would be able to catch a fish there. But you know what's super funny? That the tides that I fish are really, really wacky. And the reason I say that is, like, I'll fish, like, a slack high or a slack low. And if I'm going after a big fish, I'm wanting that slack low tide or that slack high tide. That's, like, that's the best time to fish, in my opinion. Because, it's one thing catching, like, a 15-pound bass versus, like, a 40-pound bass. It's way better. You can catch numbers, and I mean numbers, of, like, 35-inch bass in a bunch of my locations in, like, on tides that are moving, the current is fast. But when it's slack tide, you get one shot. And you know, and the thing that I think, you know, distinguishes me from other anglers, I'm not like, I know like there's an area, but I'm focused on, I know that there's one specific spot. And when you get really good, and I'm not saying that I'm really good, I'm saying that I'm pretty good at fishing my locations and I'm pretty good at fishing off the rocks. But when you get really good at fishing from the rocks and you catch enough big fish in a spot, say my microphone, if you're watching my microphone right now, say my microphone is a rock and the current is moving straight at the microphone right now. If I'm a bass, I'm going to be facing, like, if I'm a bass, I'm facing this way and I'm sitting right behind your microphone or rock or whatever. And what's going to happen is the bait is going to get crashed onto this microphone. And is going to get disturbed and it's going to get pushed around the side. So I know if I land my eel here and I bring it right up past this microphone on the side, there's going to be a bass sitting right beside this microphone and it's going to come out and hit it. That's why I catch almost 90% of my biggest fish on within the first five casts. I have one story. One of my bigger fish this season, was probably my second largest fish of this season. I have an eel. I hook it through the behind the eye. I pitch it into the water, you know, just like lightly cast it into the water. I reel up. I take one cast. It hits the water. I put it on my line roller. I literally take one crank. I feel the tap. Hooks it into the second biggest fish of the season. Literally didn't spend more than 3 minutes out on the water before I hooked into that fish. And that's because I knew it was the perfect tide. I showed up at the exact right time. It was the perfect tide, and I knew there's gonna be one fish, and it was gonna be behind this one boulder. And it's a sneaky boulder because it's out in the water and it's not exposed. And so it's super hard. And after fishing that area for probably close to 8 weeks, you know, I got getting snagged in every boulder in the area. So no, I'm just kidding. But like, I knew that there was a rock there because I had, you know, snagged the rock, and you know, like I knew the rocks in the area, and because I fished there for so long. And I knew that that was a spot that the bass love to use to break the current. And I knew it was a bigger rock, and I knew exactly where to place the thing at low tide, at slack low tide, where I knew there was going to be a big fish there. And I cast it out, and the thing hit right where I wanted it to. Right where I wanted to. I like to cast a little bit behind the rock, but I literally landed it like right on top of the fish's nose. And so what I think happened was, if this was the rock, I landed it right behind the rock. And as the eel swam down into it swam right in front of the fish's nose. And I even believe that it ate it before I even took my reel, my like cranks, because I didn't really feel tension. And then I felt like weight. And then I knew I was on a fish because I knew I was not on that rock. And I just hooked set into the fish and it just started peeling off 20 yards of line. So I knew that that worked. That was like perfect. Now, I've done very similar things with pencils. And the reason I knew that there was a big, I knew there was a rock there was because I had thrown a pencil over that exact rock and I've had bass come up and hit it right over that rock. So I knew that there was fish there. Now, the funny thing is, that rock, that boulder, if you're standing, like, the rock that I was standing on, there's two boulders, and there's one section where there's about three boulders, and they're all like really close to each other, and they're all exposed. And this leaves you this narrow little channel. And I talked about this in the last podcast, because this is where I was fishing with Joe from Pumbaa Plugs. And we were alternating casting in this one spot, hooking up every single cast on fish that were all 30 pounds. And we were alternating in between these rocks. And we were throwing huge jointed swimmers like this, like giant, big jointed swimmers. And I kid you not, I think we took maybe two or three photos that day of like the fish, but there was one fish that had the entirety, like it ate the whole, the thing was crumpled up like this in the fish's, the whole plug was in the fish's mouth. So that fish ate it so aggressively from the side that it folded the plug up and it was in its mouth. And that just shows you how, number one, how realistic this looks in the water, that the fish is so aggressive that it's going to hit it with such ferocity that it's going to fold the plug in half before it gets hooked. I don't even know if it was really that hooked. It was more just jammed in its mouth. But, and that was in like, you know, and that was in this tiny little narrow chute. And so if you think about it, you got a boulder, you got boulders right here with all this turbulent water coming over the top and pushing bait fish and whatever over the top, and the bass are all layered right in the rocks. I'm talking, there's probably 30 fish and they're all like 30, 40 pounds. And they're all just nestled in between these rocks and they're waiting for these bait fish to come over the top and they go and hit it and then swim back down under the rock. And it was super competitive because they're hitting the plug super, super hard. So that leads me to believe that there was competition there. And if you know anything about fishing for a large striped bass, the smaller fish are always the one that eat first. And the fact that we were catching 30-pound bass as the smaller fish means that there was easily some 40s and maybe even some 50s in there as well in the mix. And I was saying to them the entire time they were fishing, I was like, I know you're a plug builder, but oh my God, if we had eels, we would be like, this could be interesting. We could be getting like legitimate 50-pound fish this night. And that's just, that was so like, that was such an eye-opening like experience to fish that spot and be like, yep, there could be 50-pound bass. Like, I don't think I've ever fished anywhere, maybe the Cape Cod Canal is probably the only place that I fished. And I did catch my 50 at the canal. And I hope I catch another 50 off the surf, like the, off the rocks, in my own spots. And so I hope that happens at some point. That's actually a goal for my season. I guess everybody has a whole bunch of goals. And I feel like, I don't know if I've talked about this, but, I was talking to somebody about this. My goals for this season are, number one, to catch the biggest fish of my life. So hopefully a bass over 50 pounds. Try to catch and this is, again, you always have to make goals that you can hopefully reach and exceed. And, but you want to make goals, difficult to get to because, you know, that's what you gotta strive for. And my big goal is to catch 10 fish over 40 pounds this season. I caught 8 last season. So I feel like 10 is feasible if I spend more time in those locations. Now, if I could do that, I'd be extremely happy. Another one of my goals is to catch like a 40 pound or hopefully a few 40 pound bass, and do it on film. I would love for you guys to be able to see, I don't think there's really much surf casting video of somebody hooking a legit 40 pound bass and having it scream drag and everything and have it in like really high quality footage. I would love for you guys to see that. The other thing that I've been doing that I'm thinking about, because I get so much hate for this, is when I weigh my fish. And the thing is, when you're weighing a fish, you know, there's like, I'm releasing my bass. Is there a thought in my mind that that fish died? Not one. Do I think that the bass are under far more pressure on their insides and their guts when they're, you know, 400 feet or 500 feet underwater? 100%. So the bass being lifted vertical, I do not think hurts it at all, personally. But what I'm going to be doing in this next season is, I don't know if you guys know of like what you do to like carry logs with, but pretty much I'm going to take one of those things and I'm going to use that to put the fish in, and I'm going to weigh it with my Boga through one of those. So hopefully that like appeases the masses of people on Instagram getting pissed because I lift the bass vertically. And I don't know what to tell you. And then there's other photos, you know, with me holding my hand in the gill plate of the fish to secure the fish. Again, do not think that kills the fish. I'd be absolutely shocked if that killed the fish. And the reason I say that is, if you think about it, the mouth of the bass goes all the way back to its gill plate. Now the gill plate of the bass is a bone, you know, and it's a bone. As long as your hands are not in the red part of the gills, you're on the bone of the gill plate. And you see so many people do this. You look at any video of like, and a lot of photos of surf casters that are extremely good at what they're doing, and who are extremely like surf casting, and like catch and release is like, they preach catch and release. There's so many pictures and video of them grabbing a big fish by the gill plate. And that's because a lot of people that do this a lot and catch a lot of really big fish know that that's not going to hurt it. They also know that holding the bass vertically, which is how they get the weights of their fish, if you've ever wondered how they know how big a 40-pounder is or whatever, they do that exact same thing with the Boga. Now, I'm not trying to defend me and really, like, I'm just saying this just to put that out there so everybody knows, like, what the deal is, what I think when you're commenting, oh, keep your hands out of the gills. It's like, you know, I'm not touching the gill itself. I'm touching the gill plate, and I don't think it kills it personally. And that's just my opinion. But because I want to, you know, hopefully, and if it does, and that's why I'm changing, because if it does, and you guys have, I've done a great job of extremely compelling arguments, so I want to do the best I can to keep the bass alive. So if that means trying to use like a log carrying device to wrap around the fish so it supports its belly to be able to weigh it, because for me, you know, I take a photo of the fish, yeah, but I would love to, like, I'm super competitive with myself, and I try to just keep getting more fish and bigger fish, and if I can beat myself and catch the biggest fish in my life, I would love to be able to just know how heavy that is so that I can catch another fish bigger than that, hopefully one day, and know how heavy that is. And hopefully I can release that fish, and then it can, you know, reproduce and have its genetics go on, and there can be, you know, 20 years from now, we can have 10 fish that are that big, 20 fish that are that big. So that's just my thought about that. I kind of lost my train of thought. It was just what I was talking about before I went on this tangent. But yeah, I don't know. I don't know why I was trying. I'm trying to think about what I was thinking about before this. Man, oh well. But I guess I was talking about fish feeding aggressively in the rocks. And I think that's something that is, like, I have some spots in the rocks that I'm extremely excited to fish. I also have some spots that are in the estuaries, and I'm starting to go look at the estuaries. And again, I've said multiple times, I have a broad knowledge of fishing in general. I know how a rip works. I know how to really set up on a rip in the rocks and fish that. I know really how, I kind of know how, I'm, I guess, I know how to fish a rip on a beach. I know how to fish a rip on in a jetty, or in an estuary. But I want to be as confident in all of those locations. Are some of those locations, like beaches and estuaries, not as productive for larger fish? 100%. I know for a fact that if you really want to target a trophy bass, that you have a much, much higher percent of chance with lures and eels and plugs if you are in a spot with rocks. Because what happens is those bass are way, way more predictable about staging. When they stage up in rocks, they're so predictable. Yeah, you can have a rip and that can be also predictable. But the thing about rips is they do hold big fish, yes. And certain times of the year, they do hold big fish. But I feel that in the rocks, the bass are holding bigger fish for a longer time in the year. So, like, there are a lot of spots that get cold, you know, and you'll fish a spot and have a lot of luck in the spring, and then it gets colder as the year goes on, and colder as in, like, the bass are not as big in that spot, or there's fewer of them. And so when I think about that, as far as there being the bass staging in a spot. There's probably a lot to do with that. You know, that water temperature also, it will increase, which, and the wind could be different, which could push the bait in certain areas and whatnot. So, and the water temperature could also make, it could be you're fishing in that spot in the spring and you're catching bass on, because there's alewife in that area. And now the alewife aren't there because it's mid-July. And now it's pogey or bunker or whatever. And you want the bunker are not in that area. So what you want to do is you want to go and you want to, like, there's not going to be fish there. There's not going to be big bass there because they're not feeding on that bait. Now, there's other spots where you don't catch a single fish in the spring in that spot. But then later in the year, there's going to be bunker and mackerel and whatever in that area. That's where you want to, you know, start fishing in there. So that's why, again, keeping a log really, really helps. It does help immediately. Like, you keep a log, within a few weeks, you now have a pattern. You really, it's just data points. What comes down to why people that have been fishing for 35 years tend to have the upper hand on people like me that have only been really fishing for maybe four, is the fact that they have much greater data. Like, their data is much better, because what they can do is they'll have way more variables already figured out in spots. So they can have, if the water's dirty in one spot and the wind's blowing in this certain direction and everything, or, well, I guess you should say, if the wind's blowing in a certain direction this time of year, they know what bait fish are going to be there, how dirty the water's going to be, and what plugs they should be throwing that day. Now, I might know that if the wind's blowing in that area, the water's going to be dirty, but I might have no idea what bait fish are going to be in that area because I haven't fished there long enough, and so I don't really know what the bass are feeding on in that time of year. So that's why somebody that's been fishing for 35 years can definitely, you know, have a better, greater knowledge and data point and database, I guess. And that's why eventually I'll hopefully have that greater database to then be able to, you know, be more consistent. But the thing is, you know, I'm at a stage in my life where now I have the ability to drive everywhere and catch fish. And so I've been doing that, you know, all winter, and I've been driving around and I've been looking, and I can now kind of more go off on my own and go fish myself and not have other people drive me. Cause yes, I am not that old, but, now I'm going to be able to explore more locations and explore different, you know, food sources for these fish. Now I could be fishing off a sandy beach where there's sand eels, and I have very, very minimal knowledge of fishing in very shallow water where they're feeding on sand eels, besides maybe the Brewster Flats. Now that's why I've been, you know, tying a lot of flies this season. I want to get more into fly fishing. I'd love to catch a bigger fish on a fly rod this year. I spent last year, as my main goal was to catch as many large fish as possible. And I more than succeeded that. If I caught one bass over 40 pounds last year, I would have been, you know, out of my mind. And the fact that I caught countless of bass over 20 and 30 pounds is amazing. And that's so, so awesome. And I think I was extremely lucky in some regards. But I guarantee you that if the bait fish, which is the mainly bunker off the rocks, are equal to what they were last year, and what I've been hearing in New York and New Jersey, and is that there's a ton of huge bunker schools, and that I love hearing that, because if those huge bunker schools do what they did last year, I know a lot of you boat guys who are fishing off the boats had extremely successful seasons just snagging and dropping bunker. I hope that, I never really snag and drop bunker this year, but I am as dependent on those bunker to catch big fish as you guys are, because I've talked about this again as well, but what happens is the bunker are offshore, and then at night they get pushed inshore by these fish, and the bass are all in these rocks, and that's where I can get access to fishing and actually catching them. And when I talk about offshore, they're probably, I don't know, maybe 100 to 700 yards offshore from where I am fishing. So during the day. So yeah, I've been lucky enough during the day, and I know a lot of guys that caught huge fish this year during the day, like huge. And I'm talking like 35, 40 inch bass all during the day, you know, in even in that pound range, 35, 40 pound bass during the day on pencils and on spooks, because the amount of just huge white bait that was around last year made the fishing incredible for people on Cape Ann. And that was super lucky. But the thing is, I've had a lot of people DM me and be like, oh, I'm definitely gonna make a trip to, you know, Cape Ann and fish Gloucester and Rockport and all that area. And I always tell them, I always say that it's not like some like golden like mecca, because the thing about fishing here is the bass are plentiful and they might be more plentiful than a lot of areas. I think that, I mean, if you're fishing on Cape Ann and you're not catching a schoolie bass on every single rock, the thing is, like, if there's even a group of boulders anywhere, I'm talking about in like a harbor or you know, anywhere like off the rocks, off a sandy beach, a group of boulders, even on sandy beaches, there's a very high percentage that there's gonna at least be a few schoolie bass sitting on it. I know that there's one beach where it's not very long either. It's probably maybe a mile or 2 miles, and it's just all little like divots in the sand, and the divots just go right down, and in each divot there's about 3 fish, and they're small. They're all like that big. They're tiny. But if I ever take like somebody that's super young out to go fish, I always bring them there because it's a sandy beach, and we walk this mile stretch and we catch 40 fish that are all like that big. But you can catch them on topwater, bucktails. I mean, it's like, it's a ton, and you don't get anything that's 20 inches. I mean, they're all under 20 inches, but it's just numbers of fish, just tons and tons of little tiny bass sitting right in these little divots. And that's the same thing off the rocks. If you're fishing anywhere on the rocks, no matter if it's the wrong wind, wrong tide, there's gonna be a schoolie sitting there. You throw a little SP minnow or a little pencil popper, you have a very, very good shot at hooking into a fish. It's just, you know, that's how I started fishing around here. But when we're talking about large fish, number one, it's probably the most difficult place to land a big fish. For sure, one of the most difficult places. The rocks that we have to deal with. It was funny, when I was talking to Joe and I was talking about the fly rod, I was saying, what are the odds you think that we can land a fish? Or what are the odds we can actually catch the fish on a fly in that spot? He said, not a chance. He said, there's no chance we could land a bass in the rocks that we were fishing. Because he even got broke off multiple times on these 30 pound bass with spinning gear, with 50 pound braid and very heavy lockdown reel. I don't know what reel he was using, but he had the drag lockdown too. And the bass are getting him on the rocks. They're getting me on the rocks. I lost tons of plugs there, but that's the thing. It's an unforgiving area. I've lost tons of big fish in general in those areas. I was super fortunate, and that's why I fish such heavy stuff. I'm like, people ask me, I'm like at the tackle store and I'm buying 80 pound fluorocarbon. And they're like, why are you buying 80 pound fluorocarbon? And I'm like, because I fish in these spots that have current and have huge fish and extremely like barnacled covered rocks. And all it takes is, you know, that line to hit the rock and you're done. That's why I have 80 pound braid on my reels, or 50 to 80 pound braid on my reels. Because I know that the bass are going to be, you know, they will break me off. If they have any, like, they have any time to do it, they will get me in the rocks and they will break me off. So I know that I need to be like having heavy drag and heavy leaders, because I know that they're gonna go and they're gonna rub me up against a rock and they're gonna snap me off. And so when we're talking about like location and then being able to actually get to a spot that's productive, I completely never finished my story here. When we were talking about the people saying that they DM me all the time, they're like, oh, I would love to come and fish Cape Ann and everything like that. The problem with fishing Cape Ann is, yeah, it's very unforgiving on your gear. And two, there are a handful of spots that actually hold large fish, a handful. And among those spots, I've seen guys fishing with live eels in those exact spots that I fish before and not catch a single fish all night. And as soon as they leave, you know, I go and I know that there's a bass in this spot. That's why a lot of the spots that I fish, I've spent hours upon hours upon hours upon hours fishing and not catching a big fish at all. Catching one fish in like 5 hours of fishing. And it's like under a keeper, you know, it's tiny. And that's why, like, it's all about time. Like, it's not like an instant thing. Like, to be extremely good, it really takes obsession. To be extremely, extremely good at fishing, you have to be obsessed with the hunt for that huge fish. And that's when I was creating my name, Striped Bass Hunt, because it's not like fishing anymore, it's hunting. You know, you have to get the patterns of these fish. And the amount of variables that you have to deal with is absolutely staggering. You read these forums, and I pretty much like, especially now, like I've been reading so much because there's nothing else to do. So I've been reading and reading and reading. I have a membership to almost every, like, you know, fishing, platform, like, because I think that, number one, I love supporting that stuff because it's like awesome that somebody's doing this. And number two, I love learning about the fishing. I love just like taking in this information because it's unlike anything that you've ever, you know, done before, because each location is so very different. You know, what may be working for me here is not going to work for you in New Jersey. Or, but that's the thing. That's why I say what I say. And I love to go, and that's why I love to travel. And one of my big goals this season was to go and do some traveling. Don't know if that's going to happen this year. And traveling as in try to go fish New Jersey, the Cape more. I'm at least going to be fishing the Cape this year. I'll probably catch my first fish on the Cape this year. It's all depends. And I think I'm fortunate enough to be able to live close enough to the Cape, you know, that I can drive there, you know, on one tank of gas and back on one tank of gas. So I know that I can kind of like keep myself separated, and it would be as if I was driving 23 minutes away instead of 23 minutes. It's an hour and 23 minutes. So who knows? It's definitely a, you know, it's going to be an interesting year, very interesting year for everyone. It's going to be extremely interesting for fishing. I'm very curious to see what happens. As far as with fishing, I wonder if it's going to be, this is something I want to put out there, you know, comment below. What do you think is going to happen? Are people going to be fishing more, or are people going to be fishing less? And the reason I say, are people going to be fishing more, is because maybe there's more time they are, you know, don't have, or they can't be really working right now, so they are fishing. But then maybe they'll be fishing less because there's, like, let's be honest here, striped bass fishing is extremely expensive. You know, you're fishing with gear you can catch a bluefin tuna with. So it's not the cheapest sport in the world. Yeah, there are cheaper options, and you can obviously fish for fairly cheap, and there's definitely ways that you can catch bass, a lot of bass, and be very successful on gear. But to be, I mean, it's definitely takes some money to fish, whether you're fishing with bait or you're fishing with lures. So I wonder if there's going to be less people fishing because they don't have as much money to fish. And so I'm very curious to see what you guys think. Are there going to be more people fishing, or going to be less people fishing this year? And then within the next few years, what is going to happen with these new regulations? Are there going to be more 50-pound bass around because people are letting them grow? Who knows? We're in crazy, crazy times right now. I just keep saying it, and I'm at home, you know, doing my work at home now. I have so much extra time from not having school and everything, so I've just been trying to get set up so we can make it as, so you guys can follow my season as best as you can, and for it to be as interesting as you can. And I hope that these podcasts are going to give you guys some entertainment through these, you know, boring times, and I guess crazy times, but like when you're sitting at home for hours doing nothing, hopefully this can help, taking out a few hours out of your day until the fish come back, in which case get out there on the water. I, for one, this has heightened my cabin fever by so much. I'm dying to catch fish. And the thing is, I suck at fishing freshwater. So that's why, like, I have people ask me that, like, why don't you go fish for largemouth bass or trout or whatever? And I suck at fishing during the winter. I can go catch a bluegill in a pond or a largemouth bass or whatever. And even trout. Like, I've gone fly fishing for trout in New Hampshire and stuff and been super successful. I guess while we have all the time in the world, right? And hopefully this also helps you guys, you know, whatever. But I know we're talking about striped bass, but let's go into brook trout for a second. I took a camping trip with my brother 2 years ago. We went up to New Hampshire, or cross, I guess. I don't know. We went across to New Hampshire, and when we were fishing, we hiked up this. We got there. We drove for a while. We got there, and the river that we were going to be hiking up. So pretty much what was going to happen is there's a river. We were going to hike across that. It was more of like it was going uphill because it was like going up towards a mountain, and our plan was we'll drive down this road, we'll hike up this river, and we will then, once we get to where we are, we'll fish for one day, we'll hike up this mountain, and then we'll fish the next day, and then we'll come home. So that was our plan. We started driving across this road, and then all of a sudden we realized we were driving across like the first section of the stream here, not cross, but alongside like the river or the stream or whatever, what was going up, and we were falling beside it, and all of a sudden the road just disappeared, and there's a bridge that was probably, I don't know, maybe 35 feet, you know, above the water, and it was completely ruined, and we had to like cross over, and we couldn't, and with the car at least, it was completely washed out, and so the water level had to rise 35 feet to knock that bridge out. Like absolutely like mind blowing how high the river got. It would have been a sight to see. And the fact that there was, you know, I'll get to that in a second, but we were like, okay, we're about maybe 3 miles from, or where we, no, we were probably like 4 or 5 miles from the road, from the head of the trailhead. So we hiked over to the trailhead, or we went across the river, we went across the river, and we hiked across to the roadhead, and then we started our hike, and the trail was washed out, completely washed out. Luckily, my brother that was been on this podcast multiple times, not the filmmaker, but the other one that was at the beginning. He used to be my co-host, but now he's not here anymore. Not that he died, but like he's not, he's working. Never mind. So he's extremely good at hiking, and he's done like a whole bunch of crazy hikes and whatever. So he somehow we bushwhacked for 10 miles that day. And we got to the campsite. It was an extremely difficult hike. I mean, I'm talking about up these extremely steep cliffs and hills. And it was an easy 10-mile hike. It took us probably 3 hours longer than we thought. And we finally got to this trail. And, you know, we got out there and I knew nothing about trout. And we started fishing and we absolutely slayed it. We caught so many fish there, and they weren't big. They're all like finger sized trout. They're tiny. We had a few, I think they must have been a different species of trout, but they're bigger. We had a few bigger ones come up and try to hit it, but we caught probably 80 fish apiece. It was literally every cast. It was in there tiny, and we ended up fishing there for 2 days because we didn't want to hike all the way up this mountain, because we had hiked. It was supposed to be a 5-mile hike the first day, and it was doubled. And then we hiked back 3 days later, and we had extremely good fishing, trout fishing. But besides that, I don't really fish freshwater at all. So, I don't fish the entire year. I try to go after holdovers, but I lack motivation because I refuse to believe that there are actually fish out there. And then at the same time, well, because I've been skunked so many times, that's why I say that. But then at the same time, it's also freezing out most of the year. I'm talking about everybody who fishes for striped bass pretty much is in the same boat. I mean, it's so cold; everything's frozen solid. the harbors are frozen solid, the estuaries are frozen solid. So there's not a lot of fishing you can do in the middle of the winter, especially for striped bass. And then when you go, now that it's like kind of the same temperatures, a few days we've been in the 60s, and I'm like, oh man, this feels so fishy, you know, and I'm going and I'm looking at all these spots and I'm like, you could tell me that there's fish there and I'd believe you because, you know, because it looks so like, it looks so good and it should be, and it's warm and I'm like, I'm vibing about the fishing and now I'm trapped inside and that's all I've been thinking about for days. So, I know I'm not the only one. I'm just tying flies right now. I don't know how to tie flies at all. I've been contemplating posting on my story a photo of one of my flies that I've been tying, but then I'm like, yeah, I know that there's some like hardcore fly fishermen that follow me and I'll just get destroyed because I cannot tie flies. Like, it's bad. It's not like, the thing is, like, for me it's like, if it catches fish then like whatever, and I 100% catch fish on them. Like, they catch fish for sure. I've caught tons of fish on the flies that I've tied, but I have absolutely no idea what I'm doing. And I feel like, you know, if it looks like a bait fish, what I really do is I go and if I see something online that inspires me, like on Instagram or something, and I'm like, that fly looks good, I want to make that. I have the materials, so I just like go from what it looks like and I just tie it up. It's not that bad. I should grab one, but they're just rubbish. I'll grab one right now and I'll show it on the video podcast so you guys can see it and roast me in the comments about how bad my fly tying skills are. But I've got a few of them. This one's garbage. I won't show that one. This is one fly that I've tied. I think it's gonna work well, to be honest, because it looks pretty good. I have everything that a fly needs. Look at that. Tell me that's not gonna kill. That looks amazing. You know, so what I did here, I'll describe the fly right now. I got some white bucktail, and the reason I have green thread is because that's the only thread I had left. So just so you know, so I took white bucktail, I took the longer strands of the white bucktail, and I tied it on to my hook. I don't exactly know what size hook this is off the top of my head, but I tied it onto a smaller hook. And then I took some olive bucktail and I took a few of the longer strands of the olive bucktail and I put that on. And then I put some of the, it's the flash, the shiny stuff. There you go, for you fly guys. That's the technical term, right? The shiny stuff. So I took the, I can't remember the name of it exactly, but believe me, it's the good stuff. And then I took some peacock, feathers, and put them on the top. And I'm pretty sure this is supposed to mimic a sand eel. And it's about, I'd say it's about 6 inches, 5 to 6 inches. It's a pretty slender body. And this thing will absolutely kill it on the sandy beaches. Put this, like, I'm talking about this spot, you know, I was talking about the spot that has the troughs there. If you fly fish that, oh man, you can have so much fun. I've walked that for hours in the rain when there's, because it's actually a really popular beach. I'm not going to tell you what beach it is just because, but it's a super popular beach and you have to pay a ridiculous amount of money to get onto it when it's like this, the height of the season. So I suggest fishing it in the morning when it's raining. And if you know what it is, you'll know what it is. And so I fish that in the morning and, I'll go when it's raining, so there's nobody there, and I'll walk the beach and I'll throw this little fly. And I've had days where I've literally caught hundreds of little fish on this. Like, I go through flies, like they destroy the flies. So I feel pretty good about this. This guy will be the honorary one fly that I have on my podcast table. So I feel pretty good about my fly that I tied. And the reason I feel pretty good about it is because I didn't have to pay $10 for it. So that's pretty good. I had to pay like way too much money for a deer's tail. And some feathers and stuff. You know, it's whatever. I guess it's cheaper. I guess you can make so many more flies just from, like, you can make so many flies out of, like, the materials that you buy that it's way worth buying materials. And it's not that hard. If somebody like me, if I can tie a fly and I can catch a fish on the fly that I tie, anyone can do it for sure. And there are people that are way, way better at fly fishing than I am, and who will, you know, could destroy me. Whatever. If you're a big fly fisherman and you're listening to the podcast, DM me, tell me what I should tie, and tell me if I should be, I'll tie some flies. Maybe I'll do a podcast where I tie a fly on the podcast, and try, or like I'll go on Instagram and tie a fly on Instagram. That would be interesting. Do like an Instagram live and tie a fly live on Instagram and have everybody that fly fishes just cringe super hardcore because they have no idea what I'm doing, because I have no idea what I'm doing. Anyway, yeah, so, you know, I guess I started talking a little bit about access and my thing about access and to beaches. And the other great place to fish, if you want to go and have access to fishing, is go to the parks. There's a lot of town parks and stuff, and like that you should be able to get to, and it's the money that you pay, it's like what, $5 to park. So you go and you pay some money and it goes to a good cause to maintain the trails and everything, and you know, you pay a little money and you get to go fish, and some of those spots are actually killer. That's my little secret. I have a few spots, I guess, in this way. I have a few spots that are off of these trails that you have to pay to get on, and they're absolutely money. So if you're on Cape Ann, keep that in mind. Look around, see what you can see. I guarantee you that it will take you months to figure out one of those, or the spot that I'm thinking of that I have to pay. But, you know, if you can figure that out, all the power to you. That's the thing, you know, I always, again, like going back to like, I wouldn't come here because like, this is no different from anywhere else. I'd say if you want to be more productive fishing, go to the Cape. Cape Cod, the beaches off of Cape Cod hold way bigger fish than they do here, in theory. I guess you have like Plum Island, that's pretty much Cape Cod-esque fishing. I've actually never really, I fished Plum Island before, but I've never like really fished Plum Island because I feel like it's super, I guess it's just like you have to try like cover so much ground to like get to the good spots that if you don't know where you're going, it's so hard to learn. It's another place I want to learn more about. I do have some Back Bay areas in that area. I mean, there's so many estuaries throughout that area, and they're great. So I'm just, you know, trying to learn the whole thing about estuaries and when the turns in the estuaries and the current direction and where the bass are sitting in the current. It's gonna be such a fun year, as far as fishing goes. I'm so excited, and I'm sure you guys are too. So thank you guys for listening to this, hopefully a little bit longer podcast. I don't know exactly how long it is, but I hope it's a little bit longer, and I hope you guys enjoyed. Please, you know, subscribe, and one last thing. Pick up a t-shirt, a Striped Bass Hunt t-shirt, and support the show. A little trailer soon, which is awesome. And as far as what I've heard, I want to let this be known. as far as the bass are and where they are, I know that there are bass being caught from around all the way up to, I'd say, Connecticut. I'd say that's where people are catching migratory fish. So if I had to guess, it's April 1st today, by the way. So if I had to guess, I would say that people will start to see their first migratory fish on Cape Cod about April 15th, And then from around that time, us in Cape Ann are always about 2 weeks behind people on the Cape. So we will start seeing bass probably within the last week to week and a half of April, which is awesome that it's that early. Like, that would be so cool if I could catch my first bass on... I've never caught a bass. Ah, that's a lie. I've caught one. I think April 27th was the earliest I've ever caught a bass in Cape Ann. So I think it's possible. I think we could do it. And it could have been a holdover too, but I think that it is possible to get some bass in April on Cape Ann, which is cool. And I hope that the bass are going to be, you know, you pretty much have 2 more weeks, I'd say. I'd say it's about 2, maybe 3 weeks before the Cape is going to be seeing some holdovers. And then we'll have another 2 weeks and we'll be seeing some, or a week and a half to 2 weeks, and we'll be seeing some bass. Yeah, they're coming. They're coming faster than people think they are. So, and it was snowing this morning on April 1st, which is crazy. So hopefully we're done with snow. I need warmth. I need these bass, the flats, to get warmed up. But anyway, thank you guys for listening to the podcast. And I guess we will see you next time, hopefully.